So rather than tabling this, Nate is here to have a discussion. We don't really need to take action.
Okay.
But I think it'd be good to let him talk to us.
Okay. Let's get started. I'd like to welcome you to the regular session of the City Council meeting of January 3rd. I'll try to enunciate here, but I probably should keep this mask on. Our first item is a thought or prayer and the Pledge of Allegiance with Council Member Knowlton.
Thanks, Mayor. I will aim to be brief here. I couldn't help it where this is the start of the brand new year to think in the spirit of what everybody tends to do this time of year, which is think about the future. And I find in my work day job as a transportation planner that one of the biggest maladies that there is that people don't really think that things can change. That people believe generally that the way things have been will be the way that they will be. People will get around the same way they always have. And I think that what you find in the places where they have made a difference is they start by believing that they can change. In other words, they have a vision. So the thought here is on the power of having a vision, or in other words, a picture of what could be, and in some cases, what should be. So for North Salt Lake, if we were to ask ourselves what our city should look like years from now, what is the clear picture we paint, and is that picture shared? And having a vision, you know, it has all these benefits. It holds our imagination. It can engender buy-in. It compels action. It aligns our action. And again, without it, positive change, either it doesn't happen or it happens by a lucky accident. And so in this year, the start of the year, in this year where we will most likely re-engage in the creation of a new city general plan, I just wanted to start with that thought that it's a great way for us to just begin thinking again about our shared vision. We have these that already drive our action, but sometimes they're unspoken or to try to sort of elevate them and make them clear and broadly shared in 2023. I need a rhyme that ties vision with 2023, so I'll work on that and announce it at the end of the meeting. Please join me in the pledge. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Ted. Next item is citizen comment. Do we have anyone here to address the council? Seeing none, we'll move on. The next item is public hearing and consideration of resolution 2023-04R, resolution adopting an amendment to adjust the 2022-2023 fiscal year budget. Heidi?
Thank you. Just scooch this forward. All right. I believe most of these items have been discussed or already approved on some level. There really should only be a handful of things that are new. The first item is the budget and funding for the repair of the boiler here at the City Hall. We held an emergency meeting back in December. That's being proposed to be funded out of our capital improvement fund at a cost of $49,450 spending fund balance. The second item is to remove a budget rollover item for the Main Street reconstruction project. This has not been discussed before. This is a project that is completed. It was done and performed. The cash all went through UDOT. So as a financial placeholder, we did have to have it on our budget and record it as a revenue and an expense and in and out, but it's not an actual cash expenditure that needed to be rolled to this year. As we, Karen and I were reviewing the capital plans for all of the infrastructure that we're looking at for this year, we recognize that this needs to come off as we're looking at maybe potentially repurposing some of the fund balance there. In the water fund vehicles, there is an increase of $38,017, and this is related to vehicles that were approved in the 2022 budget, but we did not take delivery until September of this year. They were originally budgeted at $35,000, and once they were delivered, the model year had changed, as is happening with a lot of our vehicle purchases, as that cost increased to $38,017. The next item is the PRV vault and vault replacement and valve replacement, giving this a budget of $100,000. We do have some rollover funds from last year, but in working with Karen, we recognized that it was overlooked somehow through the budget process to actually fund current year projects. And the request, looking at what we can realistically complete before the end of the year and with what we've already spent, the request was made for $100,000. Similar to the water fund, the storm drain fund had a vehicle that was outstanding in delivery at the end of June that came in September. Same vehicle, I believe it was a F-150, so the same cost. There was also a request from engineering for additional funding for the drainage project at hole number 14 due to an increase in the project scope. As they continued to work on this project, I guess the pipes, there was some unplanned issues that happened requiring additional work. In the golf fund, Fund 55, this item is both a revenue and an expense item. It's recognizing the trade-in of 80 golf carts with revenue of $236,000 and a machinery and equipment capital purchase of $437,600. Typically, our golf carts have been purchased through a five-year lease buyout. Initially, when we budgeted this item, that was the intent, but the total cost with the trade-in actually was much more financially reasonable to just purchase them outright. It saves the city about $55,000, and so the thought was, because the cash, this golf course is in such a good cash flow position this year, to purchase those outright. So the net use of fund balance to buy those is going to be $201,600. And then last is three more vehicles from the fleet fund that are rollover of items that were approved in the fiscal year 2022 budget, one that was delivered in September and two that we were still awaiting delivery on. Total use of fund balance between all funds is actually going to be positive, because we are turning back that $1.2 million in the streets fund, and that is $667,924. Oh, well, I have an updated version there. That's wonderful. So we did have two additional vehicles in the fleet fund, an F-550 and a Ranger, that were scheduled for replacement. I was going back and forth with the fleet department whether we'd received those and taken delivery of them yet. I've not seen them, but I've been assured that we do have them and that the budget rollover didn't need to happen. I made this amendment last minute. So the actual increase to overall fund balance is going to be that $745,424. I apologize. I printed myself an old version of this. Were there any questions about the requested budget amendments?
No, but we love it when it's a positive number.
We love it when UDOT paid for it instead of us, and we recognize that we don't have to actually. That's not our actual cash we have to spend.
We like to see it when it looks like we're making money instead of losing it.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you, Heidi. This time we'll open the public hearing for consideration resolution 2023-04-04R. Is there anyone here to address this item? We will now close the public hearing and consider this resolution. Is there any further discussion? I'll entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion. I move the City Council approve resolution 2023-04R, a resolution adopting an amendment to adjust the fiscal year 2022-2023 Capital Fund, Roadway Development Fund, Water Fund, Stormwater Fund, Golf Fund, and Fleet Fund budgets.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Let's start with Ted.
Aye.
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 Thank you. That motion passes. Next item is consideration of a request to modify the condition of a site plan approval for Billy's Station, Building 5, located at 314 South Orchard Drive by Brighton LLC. And we'll turn this over to Sherry.
Great. So as you will recall, we have a development agreement with Brighton for the Eaglewood Village project. When they obtained the approval for Building 5, one of the conditions that were specified was that the construction had to begin on the Eaglewood Plaza building, which is the commercial office building to the north, prior to obtaining a permit for Building 5. Since that time, the owners of Eaglewood Plaza did apply for a building permit. In fact, they actually came in and paid for the building permit, and they had started excavation on their footings, and they went out to contract for bid, and their previous bids had been that it would be about $5 million building, came back at $10 million. And they only had an SBA loan for $5 million. So they've been trying to scramble as to what they can do with financing, how they can reduce the scope of the project, hoping maybe labor costs would come down. But in the meantime, they did request a refund of their building permit and re-established the site. They put the footings back to, or put the dirt back in the ground. They had never poured any footings. But they are planning on still building. One of the conditions that they have with their purchase of the property from Brighton Homes was by a certain date they had to start construction on it so that Brighton could start construction on their Building 5. And if they didn't, then there was some consequences for buyback that Brighton could come and buy back the property. And so they are trying to renegotiate their contract with Brighton. They've asked that we reconsider that condition. Now, in my previous conversations with Brighton, they say they're not ready to start building five for a couple more years because of the market, and they still haven't started building three and building four first, and those come first. But this request did come through Brighton to have the council consider it. We do have Nate Pupsley is here with Brighton Development. I did explain to him that we probably wanted to just have a conversation about this tonight and may not want to make a decision, but I think that he would be better apt to explain to you some of the economic issues for the reasons for the request on this issue, if that's okay.
It's good to be with all of you tonight. Nice to see a lot of you who I know pretty well, so great to be back here. Taylor Spindlove with Brighton Homes has left employment with us and will be working for the Church Real Estate Group, and that was effective about a week ago. So we'll miss Taylor. He's an amazing guy to work with and super talented architect and development manager. So we appreciate all you've done with Taylor and with us over the years, and very much appreciate the work that we've done together. Yeah, so in this case, we didn't initiate this request, and we did it on behalf of the people that bought that parcel from us between or right south of Quick Quack, and Yeah, we really liked what they were proposing. It sounds like the staff also liked their building. It was kind of a modern-looking building with this cool tunnel that went through the middle as a drive-through for the coffee shop. And so I think they'll be reducing this, the scope of that, but we haven't seen anything yet. And we... They're worried that we're going to exercise our option to buy that property back if they don't meet their deadline in starting the building on time. And now that's a couple years out, so there's not really a gun to their head right now. But we understand the implications of this. We're not trying to shirk our duty to provide the commercial per our development agreement, but wanted to pass this request on and see what the city's intent is. The law firm that bought it, they were originally going to put their office on the second floor, a really nice office building, and then they would have retail on the main floor. And I'm not sure exactly how that will change, whether they'll just be doing retail now or what exactly they're after. But obviously we're familiar with the construction cost increases, as you are. I was a little surprised that they didn't find out about the increases until after they'd pulled the permit and gotten their loan. But they're not professional developers either, so it may be that they were unfamiliar with the sequencing. But I don't think the city or us would actually get to that point and be surprised like that. So I just think it's a little bit of a rookie situation. But they are a well-funded group that has capacity to do a nice building if we can be patient with them. So whether or not you want to detach it from the development agreement and just work with them on their own, I think there is some risk there for the city that maybe they sell it down the road or nothing ever materializes. We're kind of fine either way. So I'll leave it up to you guys to discuss it and ask me questions as necessary.
Can I ask one question? Well, explain Building 5 again. It's been long enough. Is that all condos or what?
It's all apartments.
Okay.
And one of the reasons why it became all apartments is because their building grew in size, and so it more than satisfied the commercial square footage requirement that the city had placed on us. And so that freed us up to do apartments there and put all of the remaining commercial requirement on that parcel.
Was there any shared parking with this other lot at all?
Yeah, our agreement says that we have to pay for half of their parking lot, and in return for that, we do a cross parking arrangement, kind of like we're doing across the street.
Okay, so is there something in this change that we're making where we can satisfy that if they own that lot? I mean, looks like to me if they own the lot and they don't do anything, and we'll be short on parking.
Yeah, we have an agreement that if we end up going first, then we have the right to build out the parking, and then they'll reimburse us for 50% of the cost.
Okay.
But if they were to go first, it would be the opposite. So that was kind of what, just in case it changed on the sequencing.
Got a quick question. You talked to, I think you mentioned the law firm prospective tenant. And so are you saying that that tenant is no longer in play?
Well, that law firm is actually the owner.
Okay.
And so, yeah, they had and several of the main principals live in North Salt Lake, somewhere in Eaglewood. And they were trying to build that to be a little closer to home, from what I understood. So I think that it's now down to dollars and cents for them, even though they would like to build it and
okay.
closer. They don't know if they can afford it now with the
okay.
higher costs.
Gotcha.
I have a question.
They do want to be there. Yeah.
In the purchase agreement, it states that they need to begin building by a certain period or risk losing the property. What is that deadline?
That deadline already passed.
Okay.
And so now it's up to us whether we want to exercise our option to buy it back.
Is there any reason why that can't be what's amended in this discussion, is that date?
Yeah, and we've offered that to them. But
and they said no?
they haven't said no. It's just they don't like that monkey on their back. So, yeah, they don't want that threat that they're going to, like, for example, right now they've already invested in the permit and all this design, and they could potentially lose all of that. And so they're worried that they'll keep investing, and then because the market is so difficult, the interest rates are so high, they'll never be able to start the office building, and then we just, you know, pull the rug out from under them and they lose it. So that's kind of what they're nervous about.
I understand that risk. I will say to my fellow council members, that shifts the burden of risk to us as a city, hoping that this actually comes through. And at this point, I'm not convinced that that's something I would vote in favor of.
Who was the law firm?
They're a medical malpractice group, and Mark McFarlane is one of the named partners, but I don't remember the whole list of names.
It's Yonker, Norm Yonker, and those. It's
that sounds right.
Yeah. Okay.
I've been to their website a few times, but I it's been a while.
Yeah. Ricky Shelton.
Maybe John McFarlane, I think, is the main. And they do have a developer partner, a guy by the name of Ryan Forsyth, that does quite a bit of retail development that's kind of guiding them.
Well, having been on the other side of cases with John McFarlane in my previous practice, I will recuse myself on this vote when we have to take it. I know we're not going to take it tonight. I know these people, so I don't think I could be objective.
Any further questions?
Well, I guess I just have my concerns. If we don't change the date, then I guess it's just up to you, right, to make the decision. You could keep them open for however long you feel comfortable doing.
Yeah.
And all we're doing by changing this date is making them feel more comfortable that, or if we don't even set a date, then it feels like they have more options is what they feel like. But I definitely would think we want a date out there so that we would have something happen there.
Yeah. When we do delay and discuss it again, I think we should have them here to kind of argue their case. I feel a little bad not having them here to do that. I thought they were going to show up tonight. So
Sherry, if we pass this resolution as it's suggested, does that mean the city no longer has any recourse if this plot never gets developed as retail? We've released our building restriction on that. Is that what I'm understanding?
No, I think the developer's still on the hook to make sure that so much commercial and office space gets built on the project. But this is just was our last measure that said, okay, you're going to be building these other four apartment buildings before you build the fifth apartment building. We had a discussion that they might be able to find a hotel, but if they didn't find a hotel, then what they could build would be apartments, but only after the commercial and office space went in. And so I think if you were changing that, you would be just taking away that safeguard that you have there.
Mayor?
Yeah, let's have our attorney tell us.
I wasn't part of the original agreement and I haven't seen it, but it occurs to me that this is really a timing lever more than it is a certification of the use.
Right.
Because it sounds to me like the development agreement requires a certain amount of commercial and that's not going anywhere.
Right.
That requirement is remaining. Your concern now would be that the last 95, is that the right number, 94 and 95 apartments get built without that commercial use being established.
First.
Right?
Yeah. The order.
So I think you still have your use lever. You just, you know, you maybe don't have the same mechanism or, I guess, sort of leverage to enforce that as you would have had previously.
And I will say, do you mind if I add? I think the reason the city put that requirement in the development agreement is because if you look at the history of Eaglewood Village, the city had plans for something much different on this parcel that's on your screen than what we're ending up with. And so we really just did not want to give up that timing lever on the very last piece of Eaglewood Village. So, and I think that's still the case. I think that's still important to the city that we insist on that. That would be my recommendation to the council. And it is disappointing that we, I mean, North Salt Lake is not opposed in by any means to multifamily housing and doing our fair share of housing on the Wasatch Front. So don't mistake what I'm about to say. But it is unfortunate that we don't have the ability to have a use like a hotel, a restaurant, other things that we've always believed would be important components of the town center, and they just don't seem to be available here at this location. And that's a little disappointing. I'll just express that to everybody. But that's kind of the history of where we've come from.
Yeah.
And just my conversations with the owners of Eaglewood Plaza, they very much still want to build the building. They've been working really hard. They've taken out some of the project management costs. They were going to manage it themselves and were able to bring it down to like $8 million. And then they're just trying to figure out, do we reduce the scope a little bit? Do we wait just a little bit to see if the construction costs come down? And because some of the things that were being reported to me anyway is that a lot of companies couldn't even get contractors to give them bids because they were all so busy. Well, now a lot of these projects are not happening across the Wasatch Front, and so contractors are starting to have some more availability and prices are starting to come down. And I think that's one of the things that they're hoping will happen. I don't know how dramatic that change would be on their bottom line, but I think that's really what they're hoping for. They want to still build this building. They've told me that numerous occasions. They want this building. They want to move their firm here. They want to have the commercial and the office space. They're just trying to figure out how to work it, and they feel really nervous that Brighton will bite back the property, and it will basically be a loss to them because of all of the engineering work that they've already incurred on the site. So I think that's just where they come from, and maybe we should make sure that they're at another meeting if you wanted to table this, and then we can have a fuller discussion and understand what they're requesting.
I agree. I think we ought to table this until a later meeting, and so they can present their side of it, and then we can see what our options are then, and then we can think about it a little more, too. I don't disagree with Ken at all that I think we want to keep our options available, our leverage available, but
I agree with that as well, and I also feel like as a general idea, this sounds like a discussion and problem to be solved between two private entities, and that the city shouldn't really be involved in this at all, that they should work it out with themselves. But if we need to get involved, we potentially can, but I'm not at this point ready or willing to get involved.
So do you want to make a motion, table it? I don't have it in front of me here.
I move that the City Council table the requested amendment to the conditions of approval for the plan for Village Station at Eaglewood Building 5.
I'll second the motion.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed?
Abstention.
One abstention. Thank you. That item is tabled. Next item on our agenda is a presentation of the monthly financial report for the period ending October 31st, 2022 to November 30th, 2022. Heidi?
Thank you. In your packets, you should have both a detailed financial report and summary reports for both of these months. Just a quick overview of what's happening with general fund revenues right now. We're 9% ahead of year-to-date revenues compared to fiscal year 2022. When you look at just taxes, that number jumps to 10%. General fund expenditures are up $1 million from prior year. I know on the summary report that stands out a little bit. Mostly that is due to the timing of transfers. We're making transfers between different internal funds and internal service funds on a monthly basis rather than a quarterly basis. So you're catching it before the December quarter would have ended and recorded
another chunk's worth. One thing that's important to note, and I know I brought this up before about impact fees, looking at revising those revenues down, we did have a significant refund of a project that came in on the books on June 28th. It was refunded in November. The total refund was approximately $195,000, and $160,000 of that was impact fees. So in some cases, we might not see, or we will barely make up what we had earned year-to-date in impact fees. Parks does look stable still. I don't believe that was impacted by this particular transaction. I know that was part of one of the funding sources for the new bond that was approved back in December. But I did want to make a note on that most definitely now they were already not mirroring prior year to date revenues. And now with that refund, it made a significant impact. And then last, while we had a budget amendment today, which was more of a cleanup of some things that we recognize in the budget or emergency items, we do need to do at a future meeting a budget amendment for streets, storm and water infrastructure. We don't have any new projects scheduled for this current fiscal year that we're in now. We're wrapping up projects. Obviously, they always cross because a construction cycle is more in line with a calendar year than a fiscal year. So just be prepared that while we refunded that $1.2 million from UDOT, we might come back after meeting it with recommendations to reinvest that in some other projects. So, did anybody have any questions on the financial reports?
Heidi, one question. Thank you for doing this. Am I right? The summary, I think, is 10 pages?
The summary should just be 2 pages, front and back. It's okay. Colorful.
It looks. Is that at the near the bottom? Okay. Can we put that at the top next time, the summary?
Sure.
Okay.
So staff memo, summary, financial report.
Yeah. It's, yeah.
I didn't look at how it was assembled, but yeah. And it's confusing this month because we have the two, because we didn't have a December meeting. So.
Got it. Okay.
But I know this is a nice snapshot, so I wanted to make sure to include them. I know this is the format that was used previously. So, but then you can peruse the detail to your heart's content. If you have any questions about how any of the individual funds are doing or any specific revenue line item, you should have that information there.
These updates are so helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. All right.
Any other questions for Heidi? Thank you, Heidi.
No, thank you.
Next item is the City Council motion to select a mayor pro tem for 2023. And this is kind of helpful as we see the last 5 years. Natalie was 2022 and Lisa was 2021. Somebody named Ryan Mumford was before that. And Brian Horks and Stan. So is there a motion?
Yes, I'd like to make a motion. Mayor, I'd like to make the motion that we have Mayor Pro Tem be appointed Stan Porter.
Okay. Do we have a second to that?
I'll second it.
Stan, are you okay with that?
I'm okay with it. Yeah, I'm okay with it. That's fine.
Okay. Let's vote.
Roll Stan's call. Got big shoes to fill because I was a really good mayor pro tem. So
good luck,
Stan.
Stan, I'll try to take more time off for you.
All right.
At least one meeting, yeah. Okay?
Let's vote on this. Elisa?
Aye.
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 It's unanimous, Stan. Stan is the mayor pro tem for 2023. Next item is consideration of my reappointment of Brianna Larson to a second term on the Planning Commission. I think she's done a great job for us, even though she never comes to our Christmas party.
It's on the same night as her husband's work holiday party.
Always, okay. Anyway, I'll entertain a motion on this.
I would love to make the motion. I think that Commissioner Larson is ridiculously awesome. It's the technical term. Looking for the language, but I'll skip the reading the language. I'll make the motion that we reappoint Commissioner Larson to the Planning Commission.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. That passes. Next item is consideration of resolution 2023-01R, a resolution approving the 2023 meeting schedule for the City Council and Planning Commission. Wendy?
Yeah, I put Wendy's name on here, but I'll take this one.
Okay.
So we hadn't talked about it, so I didn't want to put her on the spot too much. She can talk about anything, but what you see on the screen is really the proposed dates for 2023 for the City Council and the Planning Commission. This meets the statutory requirement to adopt a resolution which essentially says here are the meeting dates for 2023. It does not preclude you from holding a meeting that complies with the Open and Public Meetings Act. If you properly advertise a meeting, you can hold a meeting at any time. Adopting this resolution will require you to cancel meetings with proper notice that are on your list. So if you say on November 21st, if you decide Thanksgiving week, you don't want to have a meeting, you'll have to post a notice that says you're not having that meeting. So these meetings take place on the first and third Tuesdays for City Council, with the exception of November 8th, which has been moved to a Wednesday to avoid Election Day, which is November 7th. And then the Planning Commission dates are on the second and fourth Tuesdays, with the exception of February 15th. Which is also related to the election, is it not? No.
I think
Valentine's Day, really? Wow. I guess I'm too old to think that we should change it Valentine's Day, but if you would like to change it, the Planning Commission may have feelings about that. So, anyway, this is the proposed list. So by adopting this ordinance, you'll be posting this list of meeting dates. I should have known that was Valentine's.
I just want to throw out there for discussion, if instead of rescheduling the meeting, that would be the second week of November, but the first Tuesday, I guess, if we could just not have that meeting, because...
Cancel the 21st meeting?
No, cancel the 8th meeting.
Because November 7th.
We usually have not met that week.
Correct.
Yeah. You know, we have met long time ago on that day, but we did it in the morning.
Oh, no, we did it one night when it was the election.
Yeah, that's right. I think we met. Well,
thank
we
you, did Shanna Schaefer-Meyer. Well,
downstairs one time.
Yeah.
One time we met in the fire station, but we had a breakfast for the people that were coming to vote.
The good old
days.
We
had our meeting as a breakfast, so that's another thought.
Do you know, one? I'm thinking this is another idea. We cancel the election week meeting, but we hold a meeting one of the days in December, because we don't have anything in December except for the party. And I think end of year is sometimes a really good time to wrap things up for the year. So I would suggest that we still whatever have the party on the 8th or whatever, but the third Tuesday, first and third, so the third Tuesday in December, we would have a meeting.
And we ended up having this year an emergency meeting in November and an emergency meeting in December.
Yeah.
So let's spread those meetings out a little. I like that idea.
Good.
I was just going to say it looks like Planning Commission is, but I don't know what day that is. So
it's the 12th?
The 12th. Is that the second?
Second Tuesday, I assume.
Yeah, that would be my assumption, too. But you said the third Tuesday?
No, first and
Tyler, do you get many holiday parties at the golf course?
We can have the Planning outside Commission of and City the Council. City Council meet.
So if we had our holiday party later in the month,
so we would do it the third
we might take a date
Tuesday
away from
in December.
Third Tuesday. Tuesday. But what day?
I would rather have a work meeting first of December
party second or third week of December.
Oh.
Party closer to Christmas.
We do it that way?
We certainly can.
Let's do that.
So also, we have not a hill I'm going to die on. So,
so it's if a really I understand what hill. You just said, December 5th would be a regular meeting of the city council.
That's right.
And the Christmas party would be some other night.
Yeah.
Or including the 19th if we wanted to do
that's great. Night.
We could also do it at another night. We
sure.
Could, you know.
Since so that's was better. Would Rihanna come if we had it on the 19th?
There's also if we get jammed up and we have a lot of items, there's also a fifth Tuesday in October, which is the 31st of October. If you feel like you're missing a meeting from the voting week, you know, from the election week.
I would rather avoid the 31st of October than...
Oh, shoot. That's yeah. Halloween, isn't it? So I'm at a stage in my life where I couldn't care less about holidays. And so it just feels so good. I don't even think about holidays anymore. Sorry. I'm sorry for all of you that...
So
for all of you that have trick-or-treat responsibilities, I'm sorry for suggesting that.
So we will cancel the November 8th, and we will reinstitute December 5th. Is that what we're saying?
Good.
Does that require a motion?
If you would like to amend the resolution, that would be great.
Okay, I'd like to amend the resolution 2023.
There's been a motion for the resolution, though.
Well, I think you're
make
making
the motion and amend it.
First amendment.
Yeah, I'm going to make a motion to the resolution 2023-01R and amend the motion to adopt the meeting schedules with November 8th deleted and December 5th added.
I'll second that motion.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Let's start with Ted.
Aye.
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 Thank you. That passes. Next item is consideration of resolution 2023-02R, a resolution amending the city's comprehensive fee schedule for certain fees at Eaglewood Golf Course and Event Center for the 2023 season. Tyler?
Mayor and Council, thank you. Hopefully you look through the packet. The majority of the changes are going to be for green fees, as well as our corporate rates for golf tournaments, and then also for the event center. Going from $18 to $19 per nine holes for walking. Cart fees, if you remember, we changed last year with the new carts coming. So this increases our base rate, which would be $18 in a cart from $56 to $58. We have our major discounted rate, PGA Book, going from $40 to $45. That will kind of be our lowest offered discounted rate. That goes more in line with our punch card as well. Our corporate rates will increase. I felt we were a little undervalued for, especially during the weekday. We're gonna be pushing a lot of our tournaments for then, Tuesday through Thursday, and trying to capture some of those during the week and then allow weekend for weekend play for public, so. We have a little bit more of an increase on the event center than you guys probably would imagine. Well, with the event center being remodeled, I think this is probably keeps us in the middle range for an event space. We kind of removed the luncheon 3-hour block of time. What we found for those weekend or even weekday lunches is they'd want to book for 3 hours, but then they would be constantly hitting us up for, hey, when can we come and start decorating and when can we come earlier? And those 3-hour lunches turned into 6-hour events. So let's just cut out the shorter events and encourage people to book for the time they actually need. So that's kind of the removal of the luncheon and more towards a 6-hour and a 12-hour rental and keeping that same rate throughout the week rather than breaking up, giving discounts for weekdays and weekends. So it'll end up being really simplified, easier for people to understand, and really easy for them to have an accurate rate. With those increases, Tracy and I talked about removing the 20% discount for citizens and moving it more to 10. That still gives them about the same amount of discount where we were at, maybe $400 for a 20% discount. Now they'll get a $300 discount for the 10%. The deposits will stay the same. So if there are any questions there or recommendations or adjustments needed? And this, I would note that this was brought to the golf committee as well with their approval and their recommendation for these. So,
what's just curious on the bartending service, is that something we just contract out to somebody?
Yeah, so we have a preferred, really we call them a preferred bartender, CUPA Bartending Services. I saw like they're really reputable. They've already done a couple events for us. That kind of, those private events, we need more of a bartending service. We have the alcohol license to serve on the golf course, but we're really not, we're not able to serve wine or liquor or anything. So that's more of a private party. And that's why we have to have a contracted bartender to serve those people. We can't, the golf course wouldn't be able to service that. So that's why we have that on there.
Okay.
And that's really their, that's their fee. We're charging the customers. That's what the bartender is charging us for it to come. So we're really just passing along that charge. We're not making any money off of that bartending service. So.
So are we, have we taken all our services in-house? Like, are we running the snack bar and we're running the event center in-house at this point?
Yeah. So we have our last kind of domino to fall is to hire a kitchen manager. We have a few applications that I've scheduled. I've told them all we'll have some interviews in the middle of the month. So that's, once we hire them, we'll kind of flesh out the rest. But yeah, everything will be over city management. So
are people going to be allowed to bring in outside caterers?
Yes, that's what we've allowed right now. I think especially for this first year, while we're getting the kitchen manager kind of up to speed on what they're doing, most of the applicants are very well, I think, equipped to run, is just from their resumes, some larger catering events. But I would feel bad kind of throwing them right into it without, especially the middle of the golf season when we're going to be busy there. So I think for this first year, we'll certainly allow them to bring in outside catering. And even for tournaments, I've got a few in mind. We'll have some kind of preferred caterers as well that we'll offer some options for. But yeah, I think we'll allow outside catering for services. So.
I think that's important, especially to some of our minority community, where the food is their
culture,
yeah, and to say, no, sorry, you've got to have our menu, doesn't work.
I would
for
say
them.
That's probably one of the first three questions someone asks is if they can bring in their own food.
Yeah,
all of our events, it's how big the space is, how many people they can invite, and can we bring in our own food? So,
I have two items I want to point out. One is the price increase for the luncheon, and I know you said it's moving from 3 hours to 6 hours, but that's a really big increase. It's from $500 to $2,300. I know it's more time, but that puts it almost, it's just $700 less than renting for the whole 12-hour window. That feels like a big jump. And that also, if I'm understanding, you cannot rent it for any length of time. That's the base entry rate. Like, any event is a bare minimum $2,300. That's really high, but might be in line with what is out there. The second one then is the discount for North Salt Lake residents. What percentage of the events that you're booking are North Salt Lake residents? Like, what amount of revenue are you going
to
be losing?
I'd have to go through our Excel spreadsheet, but it's probably, I would say it's less than 20% of our customers, and it's probably not even that high.
So for that question, I wonder, one thing that matters to me is for the golf course to feel more accessible to more residents in the city, and one thing that makes it inaccessible is that it is so expensive. And so maintaining that 20% discount gives some semblance of, we are trying to make this accessible, $2,300 event, we're trying to make it accessible. Now, if it is at a real cost loss, that might not be worth it. But if it's 20% of the events, I don't know. That's an item for that I wonder if, how can we look at this whole fee schedule and make it feel like anyone in the city can actually access this resource instead of only wealthy people in the city can access the resource. And I don't have a concrete answer, just...
Yeah. I don't know if I do either.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's a balancing between the two. We're certainly, there's not really very many event spaces within a 10-mile radius in Davis County of the golf course. There's several in Salt Lake. We're kind of still mid-tier with pricing. We also don't do, cake services. We don't have, we're really just an event space. We're not doing, let us help you run your wedding. We're really just operating as an event space. You can come in and decorate. You can do the things you want. We'll have tables and chairs for you. But for that, we're really pushing that those that want 6 hours, you need a day. So when they're saying, well, we want to book the 6 hours, we're saying, okay, well, this is when it starts and this is when it ends. You're going to want a couple more hours. And for that extra amount of money, you really want to book the 12 hours so you can come decorate before your temple ceremony or before your luncheon. And we even just thought about doing the one rate and having it, here's your rental for the day. But for the luncheons and the family parties, we offer that. I'm not opposed to offering it the 20% still. It just was part of the conversation we had. So,
are there any comments about those particular issues from other council members?
Well, it's been a while since I've had to pay for some wedding space, but it didn't look unreasonable to me here based on what I've had to pay in the past, which was quite a few years ago. And I'm just thinking inflation and the dollars that I paid, I'm sure it was more than this. And it was not very close, and they did have some nice amenities, and the fact they had a whole bunch of plants.
And I will say those that have booked for 2023, and we even have bookings for 2024, we've given them this price as this potentially could be your cost, and we've not had any pushback on what those would be.
So. Are most of the events weddings?
Yeah, we had mostly weddings booked for this year. I was a little bit surprised how many Christmas and company events we had this December. We kind of got a late start with construction. Really, we shut down in October. We really didn't start booking until April, May. And most of the bookings for next year are weddings and ceremonies. So.
Commissioner, I support the 20%. That's the one, when I went through this, I just felt like a 10% discount for residents doesn't sound like a, it didn't seem like a meaningful discount. So I thought just keeping the 20%, that was the one item that I focused on as a possible tweak to it.
Along those lines, if you're mostly booking weddings, people don't get married very often, usually. And a 10% discount doesn't feel like, oh, I'm definitely having my wedding in my city then, because look at this, I get this discount. It feels like I get $230 off, meh. But if it's mostly weddings, you get your one-off wedding or two or whatever, a bigger discount will make it feel like, yeah, I'm for sure using the golf course. That's such a good deal.
I would love for everybody that gets married that lives in North Salt Lake to get married at the golf course. So if that
my wedding was at the golf course.
Yeah, exactly. So. If everybody could, and if the tipping point is that extra, $300 to $230, then it's probably worth it for us to offer that. So I'm okay with it.
Tyler? Go ahead.
I fully support the 20% discount also. But I am also a little troubled at the $2,300 versus the $3,000. Because of 6 hour, 12 hour, it just doesn't seem consistent.
Yeah, we tried to make it in between, so we were offering an extra hour as 200, so we were kind of trying to find the happy, we didn't want to offer a 6 hour rental for 1,000 and then here if you want 3 extra hours it's 600. We were trying to find a balance between the two. So if somebody wanted 8 hours or 9 hours, it would be closer to that 12 hour rental, and then in that sense it would just push them towards that amount.
So. Just trying to get them to take it for the day.
Yeah, yeah, basically. Not really an upsell, but kind of.
This also removes the luncheon versus evening hours. Mm-hmm. So instead of pushing people towards a luncheon, it seems to push people towards an evening event with less hours.
Yeah, we're happy to still do luncheons. It's what we don't want to do during the week is take up corporate golf tournament times. Part of our change with our corporate tournament structure and the pricing I did is now that we're over the event center, I really want to allow us to have all-day weddings on the weekends every weekend, but still allow public play, which would make us, in a sense, more money. rather than booking a golf tournament on Saturday and then not being able to have a wedding. So it's really just a cost analysis of, okay, we have, you know, do we charge enough for weddings to make it worth it for us to do weddings, or do we keep it low and then try to do golf tournaments? So we're trying to find a good balance between the two, and I think with Tracy and I and my staff's analysis, I think this is a good starting point for us. We may have to adjust and look at where we're at after this year and now analyze and say, well, you know, we did 80 events and 78 of them were 12-hour rentals, so do we even offer the six? Or, you know, we had a lot of requests for shorter hours, and is it because we had such a high rate at 2,300 we didn't get any six-hour rentals, and kind of looking at it that way, so.
I think that's a good idea, almost like a pilot project for the year, just test the waters.
Yeah, I think with the event center being done and what we'll have with the deck, and it's really, we may be underpriced even now with as much as we've increased, so.
Well, having paid for a few weddings, I think we're underpriced at $3,000.
So I think if it's a wedding, like these do seem like such good prices for a wedding. But I, as a, I don't know, my role for the city and all residents of the city, it's a hard pill for me to swallow if any city dollars go to support the golf course and then the golf course absolutely prices out a big portion of our residents. That's hard for me to swallow that. But I want most of all for the golf course to be independently able to finance itself. So having higher fees allows that to happen. So it becomes such a trade-off.
Yeah,
I think at this point we're close to being able to make the argument that not every resident of North Salt Lake is annually making payments to the golf course. It's being paid for by user fees, which I think is the right place for it. So anyway, and I have to say those kinds of things as the city manager. I have to say, you know, a 10% discount's better than 20%. Mm-hmm. It's my job.
Tyler, recognizing that Friday and Saturday night are wedding nights, was there any consideration of having some kind of a weekday evening pricing?
And I think we experimented that with it a little bit this year. And like I mentioned, we kind of just really got beat up on the events that booked for evenings or luncheons on, well, can we bring our stuff in earlier? When can we decorate? And, you know, we tried to be, get a balance of customer service and making people happy, but also being firm on, well, you paid for this time and you are allowed to come in this time. And we were very flexible with people, and, you know, they booked at 3:00. Well, if you can bring your stuff in at noon. And so it was a little bit of
work. I can just see that, obviously, a golf tournament, you have to kind of finish up about 2-ish, mm-hmm. serve a lunch. It's tough to get them out by 3:00.
We had some very close groupings that were tournaments that were slow and weddings that wanted to come in early, a lot of those. So we're trying to eliminate those conflicts.
I think a venue with a really firm boundary that you can't come in before your booking time is very reasonable. I don't think you have to be flexible about that.
Yeah, this year we're going to be very strict on.
Oh, you've never dealt with a bride, have you? A bride's mother.
Yeah.
All right. I guess I heard a motion to at least maybe put the 20% back over the objection of the city manager. Is there a motion?
I'll make a motion that we accept this resolution with the amendment that North Salt Lake residents receive a 20% discount instead of a 10% discount.
I'll second it.
I have a motion and a second. Any further discussion?
Can we maybe modify that to 15% and meet it halfway?
Nah, it's a pilot, remember? We're going to come back in a year and see what happened.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
All right.
Then I won't offer an amendment.
Elisa?
Aye.
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 Thank you. That motion passes. Thank you, Tyler.
Actually, Tyler, sorry, before you go, I guess you're not going just yet. Would you, not by statutory or anything like that, come back in a year and say, hey, this is the amount of revenue we would have made if we had 10% or 15%. This is what it was because we kept it at 20. And then also that luncheon option.
Yeah, and
just let us know.
Yeah, and I think maybe once I get a good amount of bookings, I can even, next time I'm presenting something, I can tell you, okay, this is how many bookings we have, and here's our amount of residents we have, and even do maybe a few months analysis of it. So happy to do it.
Can I also say that I went to an event there last year? I've told this story before. And my brother-in-law is like, it's so beautiful to be here in Bountiful. And so we didn't mention it because we didn't want to ruin his kid's wedding. But over Christmas, my sister-in-law also said, oh yeah, that place in Bountiful was beautiful. And before I could correct her, Ron corrected her because he corrected her more nicely than I would have. But if you're like, oh no, if you're a Bountiful resident, but if you're a North Salt Lake resident, then people will know where they are.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. That's right. Yes, the Amherst resident.
We'll send them flyers.
Okay. Next item is consideration of resolution 2023-03R, a declaration of Eaglewood Golf Course old irrigation controllers as surplus.
So these are the irrigation controllers that we just replaced this past year. They're the original 1994 metal box controllers. If you've ever been to the golf course, you would have seen them. But they're basically scrap. Right now they're sitting in our yard and taking up space, so we're we had a golf course, Sun Hills, that we're looking at buying some of the components because they had the same system, but they made the same judgment call that we did. Now they're replacing them and didn't need our equipment. So just looking at surplusing these.
I remember those.
Yeah.
I actually kind of worked on that system a little bit back in 94, 95,
yeah.
96.
Have you checked with the Smithsonian to see if they'd like them? Mm-hmm.
Some of them, yeah. Yeah, I should have taken a picture of them, but they're covered in snow right now, so that's
fine. I'm trying to not have this come across goofy, but why did we need to have this come to council? Could you not have just? I mean, is there like a financial threshold, or was it just like just abundance of caution, or
it's to make sure that he's not selling stuff that we don't know he's selling.
That's it.
Okay.
No hot goods can go out.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
We don't want, don't make a ton of money off of this surplus property.
Yeah, I asked that when we were doing it with a car with the Public Works, and they said the same thing. It's just an abundance of caution, and it looks transparent.
Mayor, I'm ready to make a motion.
Thank you.
I move that the City Council approve Resolution 2023-03R declaring the irrigation controllers described as surplus and authorize the golf department to auction discard these fine controllers.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Let's start with Ted.
Aye.
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 Thank you. That passes. Aye.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tyler. Next item is discussion and consideration of a motion authorizing submittal of North Salt Lake public comments to UDOT related to the I-15 project. Ken?
Yes, thank you, Mayor. There's a couple of changes. Thank you, Wendy. There's a couple of changes that I need to make in the council packet from the materials that I sent out earlier. But let me just quickly walk through what I think our comments are that I'm proposing that we authorize the mayor to sign a letter and submit it to UDOT related to this project. The first is support of this new interchange that you see on the screen. So this is I-215 coming across east and west. This is the frontage road location and a new entrance into the city from points south, so this would be a new Highway 89. It would be extended in two directions past this intersection, mm-hmm. So it would look different than what it is now. But this interchange would provide several accesses to the freeway system that we do not enjoy in North Salt Lake today. Northbound access to I-15, westbound access to I-215. And so those are really terrific advantages. So the first comment that we would make would be support of this new interchange at this location in the south end of the city. The second comment that we would make is that the city would prefer not to lose the current southbound exit off of I-15 to our Center Street. I said it sort of softly in my materials to you, and after we've had some staff discussion a little bit more about this, since the packet materials went out, I think that my recommendation would be that we object to that being removed under any circumstance, which may, I just don't know if it catches the flavor of what you want to say, but that would be our recommendation to you, that we don't really horse trade with that Center Street off-ramp, but that we say this is a real important exit off the freeway system.
I agree, and I can tell you a storyline why this matters. There's an Amazon distribution facility. If you take away that exit, they're going to exit at 2600 South and drive through our neighborhoods.
Yeah, that was one of the things we discussed.
But you said under any circumstances. How about?
Well, in other words,
how about we put the circumstance in there is once that interchange is completed, that we, number one, that at that point we would agree to.
Well, that's how I wrote it in the materials that you reviewed, and I think as a staff, we have taken a little bit stronger position today, okay. And we're recommending that we not make that statement, that we say...
Because you're afraid they might take it away and not give us our...
That's a possibility.
I mean, there are some problems with
that. They've told us they're going to take it away. They've told us they won't even fight the Federal Highway Administration on that. And they don't think that Federal Highway Administration will reapprove it, which is what this project has to do. Sorry to interrupt you, Councilman.
No, I think that's fine. I guess I get your gist that we might as well be stronger, and and because you're right. For years they've been saying they're going to take it away. So
yeah. So the third area of comment is up here on 2600 South, and I think that, as a city staff, we really agree that the single point urban interchange, which is often called a SPUI, that's what you're looking at here on this diagram. It's option B on their map. This is the option that we think is the best option. It eliminates the confusing traffic movements that vehicles are forced to make today, where they cross to what feels like the wrong side of the street to make these movements. And we think this will move more traffic and it will feel as more as a traditional interchange that the public is used to and that you see in other areas on the I-15 corridor. And there's a lot to be said for that. So we do support this design over option A. And I'm sorry. Oh yes, and it is an improved, it is a better design for pedestrians who have to walk through the area. It's easier to sign it and to light it and have pedestrians safely get through the area. There is a recommendation in the staff memo that we do not support this. Realignment of 800 West over to Wildcat Way. We've had discussion amongst ourselves, and I apologize for not having this discussion before we sent out the materials. We believe this is a good improvement. And Chief, can I ask you to talk a little bit about the high school traffic as we talked this morning, and maybe that will help the council understand.
Sure. I think I've talked to the council before about this being the intersection of 2600 South and Wildcat Way as our most frequent accident intersection, not the least of which reason is the number of inexperienced drivers that pass through that intersection. As I have looked at this alignment, this would take a number of students driving to and from Woods Cross High School, particularly from the city of Woods Cross, out of that intersection and move them further north where they would be making a less dangerous, I believe, left turn towards and away from the high school as their ingress and egress. And with that would also be the reduction in student and rush hour type traffic, even from those students driving from the North Salt Lake area. So it does tend to take some of the school commuter traffic away from that very serious intersection.
Can I just ask about the neighborhood that it would go through on 800 West? Because there's a lot of houses and stuff there, isn't it? Just like a 25-mile-an-hour residential?
In this location here, can you guys see the arrow?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, in this location here, Woods Cross would lose, they believe they would lose two businesses that currently exist in this location here. And they think that this realignment would take away those businesses.
But no homes.
And they're objecting, as you read.
The student drivers are just going through 2600 under the freeway and along that road anyway.
This was the one that I wanted to try to understand the city's logic on it. But I just, before we do any additional digging in, I want to just understand, you are saying that in the staff report, the idea was we do not support this. And now you're saying upon further discussion, we do support this.
That's correct. That is correct.
All right.
And I apologize for...
I mean, this isn't my bailiwick, the design of these kinds of things, but it seems like there's this puzzle that UDOT is trying to put together of, if you kept 800 West, how would it tie in, and what are those kinds of movements? And while it might have some impacts for Woods Cross, it seems like it may have benefits for land elsewhere. But the other thing is just Chief Black's point, I think that's a really good point. And also just having an additional crossing across the interstate away from the interchange is a huge plus.
I think the other thing that I didn't mention is the Woods Cross development of the Smith's store with this large shopping center is constrained. The access points are constrained. It's hard to get to, it's hard to get out of, and I think this new alignment is a superior alignment for residents in Woods Cross and West Bountiful who are trying to get to that location. So there is an economic development benefit. I think Woods Cross is being a little short-sighted in their comments. So,
do you know which two businesses they are? Is it like Motel 6 and the IHOP?
The IHOP and the Mexican restaurant.
Oh, Lorena's.
But I don't know if they'd lose them if you look at that.
I don't know what
Lorena's look like. They'd probably do better off. They might lose some parking. They might have to make up.
Instead of having two-thirds of their parking vacant all the time, now they'll only have a third of their parking vacant all the time.
Now, the IHOP...
It looks like IHOP if this is IHOP.
Well, you think about it, though. You're going to open up that road that's showing there now. They could just move their parking.
More property here.
South, but it might be a little too close to the road there, but I don't.
So I try really hard. We try hard not to change positions on the city council between the time we put the packet together, but we had a more thorough discussion this morning about this. I think this is a good change to our recommendation.
I feel much better about that. That was the main one that I was had Good. Some heartburn on.
The other comment that I think we need to make consistently which is really not on these interactive maps. I don't think UDOT's asking for this comment, but in our case, we need to express support for the grade separation on 1100 North over the rail corridor. We need to also explicitly say we'd like UDOT's support in changing Union Pacific's denial to an approval. And I think we should say that. The last thing that relates specifically to the proposed design, which is what they're really asking for feedback on, is whether or not the city would support the HOT lanes, which occur in the middle of the freeway. And for North Salt Lake, our residents don't necessarily have convenient access to those lanes. They change directions based on the morning and the afternoon commute, which is a unique benefit, I think, for this segment of the freeway, where you have a clear movement of traffic southbound in the morning and a clear movement northbound in the evening. You don't see that necessarily in Salt Lake County any longer. You see peak hours that are congested in all directions in Salt Lake County. So we do have an advantage here, I think, as a region where these HOT lanes could provide some benefit by getting commuters out of the four lanes of or five lanes of new I-15 during peak hours. And so there's been some mixed feelings amongst all the cities about this because the access is limited. But I think the benefit is really a benefit to the remainder of the freeway during peak hours. And then the last comment, which isn't in your memo, but I didn't leave it out on purpose, is probably to reiterate our previous public comment where we added the idea of active transportation and pedestrian access. And we can reiterate that in this letter. And I didn't put that in the memo, but I think that's a good thing to reiterate. So
I think that's a big deal.
So those are our comments, and I would like to have the council authorize Mayor Horrocks to sign a letter from the city making those comments.
Mayor, can I make a couple of final comments on this? One, these are really well thought out. So thanks to the staff for putting this together. I love that North Salt Lake is willing to support the dedicated reversible lanes. I think that's wise, and you know, there's a lot of prospective benefits to that. And maybe we have a clear statement that, you know, these are essential to ensure congestion reduction benefits can be maintained over time. Some statement like that. This question of maintaining the congestion reduction benefit, they're going to get beaten up a lot by lots of people. And I think they're trying. And this is them trying. And then last point, we are getting arguably the best package of any city in the study area. And I suspect that it will be written this way if it isn't already in the draft. But I think, you know, magnanimous language, you know, we're grateful for their efforts in listening to us and helping us advanced active transportation and providing more access, you know, the funky interchange, the baby interchange. They're doing a lot of things that I think would add to quality of life in North Salt Lake. And I think if the language and tenor of the letter sort of reflects that, it's always helpful. I know that that would happen anyway.
To your point, I know we've said that to the staff. In person, we've thanked them for listening to us, but that's a great point. Sorry, Mayor.
I was just going to say, I think the what we would call the north part of Salt Lake City as opposed to North Salt Lake City. But the north part of Salt Lake City, those residents are very upset about this. And it's their ox is getting gored, I think.
What? Just two comments. The one is that there's a lot of discussion about, and you increase the lanes, it doesn't really help. You just increase the traffic, ultimately. And so if you build it, they will come. We're growing, so we're going to have to do this. But it does have a downside to it, no question. And I think under paragraph four, 2 points there, I would rephrase it so that you instead of saying an expression of the need, I would just say request support from UDOT in North Salt Lake's efforts to da-da-da-da-da. And then a separate is support the need to separate 2600 South from 1100 North from the rail corridor. Keep those two separate. Because we could get one and we don't need to combine them. We could get one or the other. So the separation we could get. And I really think it's a pipe dream that we're going to get an overpass. I don't think it's ever going to happen. And I don't think if Senator Lee or Senator Romney, anybody steps up, it's going to change it. That's how I feel.
Well, we have talked about vision, having vision here. This is what we're doing. We're
thinking big.
We're dreaming big, but you may be right.
Well, I can just comment on this, on the Southern Exchange. It has been around for a long time, and I thought it was going to happen by now. And then somehow it got dropped, and it didn't happen. And I was surprised because I probably wasn't paying enough attention or didn't have the access, and then all of a sudden it was gone, and now it's back. So I'm excited about it because I think that will solve our major issue is Center Street and the railroad tracks. And this should solve it. And so I'd say that's my number one priority, and it has been for, like I say, I kind of dropped interest as far as pushing it because of the fact that I thought it was going to happen. And then it didn't, and then pretty soon nobody knew anything about it. So it's good to see it back here.
So we need a motion to authorize this letter?
With the changes.
With the changes.
Mm-hmm. I certainly can make that motion, Mayor. I move the City Council authorize Mayor Horrocks to submit North Salt Lake comments to UDOT related to the I-15 EIS project as described in this city management memorandum to the City Council dated January 3rd with the changes that we have discussed tonight that needs to be placed in there.
I will provide a second.
Thank you. Any further discussion?
Yeah, I'm just wondering in the letter, are you going to say the City Council supports the mayor in this?
Yes.
So it's clear there was a vote.
The Council took action, yeah.
Let's start with Elisa.
Aye.
Natalie?
Aye.
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 Thank you, that passes. Next item is approval of City Council minutes for November 29th and December 14th.
Thank you for listing me as excused. I had to log in the next day. Just nicer that you said excused instead of she forgot and just didn't show up.
We would never say that.
I'm ready to make a motion unless we want some more time for review.
I don't have any issues with it. I
willing to make a motion unless somebody else wants to correct me.
Alicia was ready too.
Oh, go ahead, Alicia.
I move that we approve City Council minutes from November 29th, 2022 and December 14th, 2022.
I'll second the motion.
Any further discussion? All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Those minutes are approved. Any changes, updates, additions to action items?
I think we got a lot of updates today, so I'm looking forward to the next set of action items.
I would put an update on the form-based code as an action item that we track.
Yes, Ken.
And just to comment on what Councilmember Gordon just said, I don't think that we're going to put all the council priorities on the action item list, but we will provide a report to the City Council.
Thanks.
So, and so we may have an item on the action items that says, you know, we're going to have a follow-up from this meeting.
And then as we discuss them.
Yeah.
Sounds great.
Okay. Do we need a motion to approve the action items or just say they're good?
You don't need a motion.
No.
That's what it's going to say. They look good to me.
Okay, next item is council reports. Let's start with Ted.
I will just see if there is interest from at least one more council member than myself to add an agenda item to discuss a pilot to advance the dedicated bike lane on Orchard Drive.
I'm interested in that as well.
Okay. That is it for me.
I have nothing to report.
I don't have really anything to report.
I have nothing to report as well.
Nothing to report.
Okay. Next item is the city attorney report. Okay, thank you. I don't have a lot. Just a reminder, the sewer district has a vacancy and the deadline is January 6th. Do you want to have anyone apply for that? I did receive a letter from Miss Davis County offering her services to be in any of our events if we wanted that. So I'm throwing that out.
Miss who?
Davis County.
Oh.
Reminder that we've got the league day at the Capitol coming up here, and Wendy sent out an email today on that. So let's get back to her on that. And I just wanted to report that touchy little thing jumps on me. South Davis Sewer District participated in WattSmart. I don't know if you're familiar with this, but we all pay for this program with Rocky Mountain Power, and then they provide rebates. I've used them in some of my commercial properties. But South Davis Sewer District participated in this rebate. We had a project that was, the payback was 1.4 years, which is an excellent payback. And we got a check from WattSmart for $402,000.
Wow.
On that, so.
That's great.
Yeah. Wow.
Speaking of Sewer District, what's the status of the gas reuse selling thing? Have we been able to sell any of it yet?
We are, if it wasn't for bad luck, we'd have no luck at all there. But yeah, it's
I noticed it was in the news the other day, sort of.
We're looking at divesting of it.
What does that mean?
Selling it.
To who?
There's groups out there that know how to run these things. And, yeah.
Brian, I'm not sure where we are with the sewer smell because it's the middle of winter, but can we just let them know that if it ever warms up that we're going to continue to care about that? And we gave them a six-month reprieve a year and a half ago. So, yeah, just remind them about that.
You said that there's a position open on the South Davis Sewer District Board. Are you looking for citizen members to apply?
This was an at-large position that individual died suddenly. There's an opening.
Okay.
Ken, your report?
Yeah, I would just report to you that the annexation was finalized thanks to the efforts of minimal efforts by the Lieutenant Governor's office, but most of our effort by Wendy Page, our city recorder. And so so that was completed prior to the end of the year, which is great news for us in a lot of ways and allows the county to put those properties on North Salt Lake's tax rolls. And we've begun to plow snow, I'm told, in that neighborhood.
Ken, could I suggest that I noticed you had a bunch of those little packets
yes.
on your desk that the council received.
I have them right here, yeah. So take one of these.
And I was just going to note how cool and thoughtful these and important these are, and just state my gratitude to staff for preparing it.
So Linda Horrocks put this together with the staff input, and so it's a well done communication. I think there will be more communication and more outreach to the neighborhood as we work with them on transitioning their utilities. But I think that we've done it in as smooth a way as possible. I was really proud to reflect on how the city treated those future residents and listened to them, and I'm appreciative of Sherry and her staff who took every phone call, answered every email, to our utility staff, to Heidi's staff, who also has taken numerous calls from future residents, now existing residents, and we'll continue to do that. And so I think that I had some significant concerns about how that would go after my experience with some of those residents, but you know, I think it's gone as smooth as it could go, and so I'm appreciative of that and of everybody who helped, including the city council, who helped us to make that transition a good one. So,
can I just say that, and I don't know if Ted wants to comment, but the people have been really good to me from the county area and have accepted the change and haven't had any feedback that would make me feel bad.
It's great to hear. That's all I had, Mayor.
Can I also just say, John, thank you for answering the email about the snow plowing, because that was awesome of you.
Yeah.
All right. We don't have a need for a closed session, so I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved. Can I say that?
We are adjourned.
I love it when you can say
thank
that.
You, everyone.